what people are talking about.
Let me hit you with some knowledge.
This is TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Today's compelling talk radio. It's the Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com.
Ah, welcome back, or welcome in. Good to have you aboard the Baum Show. Interesting first hour, huh? Everybody's got questions about the airline business. Because we all fly sooner or later. It sure changed, hasn't it? Not the way it used to be. The romance of flying was usually for pleasure. Now that everything is global, a lot of times you're schlepping halfway around the world on planes that don't arrive on time, don't leave on time. You got to spend a lot of downtime in places that you're not comfortable with. You're stuck to your cell phone or whatever. It's, you know, a lot of the experience today is not very pleasant. We'll do this again somewhere down the road and keep you updated on what's going on. Hopefully there'll be a few more positives to talk about in the airline industry. First, let me remind you that you're listening to the Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com. Internet talk radio, we think, at its best. We appreciate your listenership and we appreciate you passing it along. Our toll-free number is 1-888-463-6748, 888-463-6748. And I forgot to mention, since we're heard in over 80 countries, we do have an international line, 011-847-470-0937. For those of you who might be living in southwestern Germany, next to the French-German border, and drinking that delicious wine down there. So if you happen to be listening and you have questions or comments for our guests internationally, 011-847-470-0937. I call him a jut-jawed crime fighter. He's kind of a look-alike, if you think about it, to former Pittsburgh Steeler football coach Bill Cowher. Only this guy, the jut-jawed crime fighter, brought up on Easy Street, studied at the right schools, made his mark bullying Wall Street big shots and other lesser lights, elected governor by his legions of fans, adoring wife, and the wife, by the way, brought up on Easy Street, studied at the right schools, corporate lawyer, gave it up to be his silent advisor and raised three daughters. The riches-to-rags political story of Elliot and Silda Spitzer. Why are guys like Spitzer, Swaggart, Clinton, and so many others on the prowl for women outside their marriages? Why do gals like Switzer, Clinton, Swaggart allow it to happen and stand by their fallen hypocrites? Our first guest on the Dave Baum Show is Frank Farley, professor of educational psychology at Temple University in Philadelphia. Professor Farley, welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us today.
Delighted to be here, Dave.
First question for you, some intriguing psychological questions that never get asked on the talk shows the morning after. And having been a talk show host myself in another life for many years, I understand what they're all about the morning after a big story like the Spitzer story broke. So if you were hosting Good Morning America or the Today Show and could ask Spitzer two questions, Professor, what would they be?
Well, obviously the first question I think that not just me but most people would ask is, why did you do it? And to me, a second question is, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to handle it in your personal life in particular and going forward? Those would be the two questions from me.
Okay, let's take them one at a time. Why did you do it? Obviously a pretty good first question that leads you into being able to draw from the individual's answer. Let me assume that Elliot Spitzer, if he could, would probably have answered the same way that Bill Clinton did on that famous 60-minute interview with Hillary by his side. Why? Because he could.
Yes. That's right. But I'm not certain that that's insightful honestly. Maybe Elliot Spitzer might be more insightful. I'm not certain that Bill Clinton had good insight into why he was doing what he was doing.
Uh-huh.
But I can give you my take on it, having studied human motivation for decades.
Please.
To me, the starting point is to look at the job these people do. What attracts people into the strange world of politics? Most people don't want it. You go down the street of most cities in the world and ask, do you want to run for mayor? Do you want to run for governor, president? Most people will say no. So what is it about that career that attracts people? Well, I think there are many things, but one is I think it attracts a particular personality. These are not basically like the rest of us, these people. And they sort of thrive on uncertainty, challenge, change, risk. They like new experiences. They like to make a difference. They tend to be very self-confident people. You know, if you lack self-confidence, boy, politics is no place for you.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, in a sense, in a sort of a unusual way, kind of thrill seekers. Standing in front of 1,000 cheering people is a thrill for them, but for many people, they would have, you know, audience fright and wouldn't be able to speak. So these people thrive on that world. There's travel, meeting new people. So it attracts what I see really as, at a deep level, a kind of a thrill seeker and risk taker kind of person.
Professor, how about, let me add one to this and get your view of it. How about, in my life as a reporter and a talk show guy over the years, having met many of them and covered many of them, from the federal level down to the local level, the one thing I found about all of them was the elixir of power.
No question. And that's exciting. That's a thrill. There's power.
Not how much they're getting paid. They could get paid $5 million a year, $15 million a year, but the elixir of power.
I think it's a recipe, Dave. It's like a variety of ingredients, and certainly power is one of the ingredients. But also, what does power do as well? Power can allow you to change the world, to make a difference. It can be fun, but it's not just that. It's that these people they enjoy the uncertainty, the unpredictability, the novelty of it all. You're meeting new people all the time. It's a kind of an exciting panorama, if you think of it, quite radically different from 99% of the jobs in this life. And so, therefore, they're different. They're attracted to all of that. And there's no guarantees here, either. There's no playbook that will tell you exactly how to win. If we don't even know precisely what it takes to win elections. And often you'll get unelected, you know. Could be every 2 years, every 4 years, and you may lose, mm-hmm. and then where are you? So you've got to have a certain kind of personality that can adapt to that and can thrive in that. But the interesting thing is that that can kind of, that much of that is positive. We want these kind of bold leaders, but it can overflow into pursuing thrills and risks on the other side of the street, as it were.
Frank Farley is our guest, professor of educational psychology at Temple University in Philadelphia. This segment of the Baum Show, if you're just joining us, is called the Spitzer Syndrome. Need I say more? The world has been peopled in your lifetime and mine with many in and out of politics who, through a number of the characteristics that Professor Farley has already mentioned and more in our conversation, have done some things that make you go, God, was that stupid? Why would you take that chance? It's kind of like Professor Farley to me in looking at this and having seen others again over the years. There's so many correlations to the politicians like Spitzer we're talking about and cheaters, just plain basic cheaters, that they have a lot in common. Somebody who cheats and a politician.
Yes. That's what he was doing. That's what Clinton was doing. The two most iconic U.S. presidents of the 20th century were FDR and JFK, both cheaters. FDR had a mistress in the White House, Missy LeHand, and we all know about JFK.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing new here. Goes all the way back through human history. And it struck me sometimes that You know, we admire the positive side of these people enormously, in most cases. You know, look at FDR. I mean, he changed America. JFK ushered in the space program, space age, and stared down the Russian bear over Cuban Missile Crisis. Big risk-taking, you know, events. And we admire that. We want leaders who are going to lead, who are going to push the envelope, who are bold and strong. But maybe there's a price to pay, and we shouldn't get, you know, too excited about it. Maybe there's, you know, in some of the cases, there's this destructive side of their personality, the negative side, and it's kind of a price to pay to get the other side.
I found it very interesting over the years with respect to former President Bill Clinton, in comparing him and listening to people talk about him compared to the last 8 years, regardless of where you are politically. Most people, in deference to Bill Clinton, will say, well, yeah, he made some mistakes, you know, with Monica Lewinsky, blah, blah, blah. But look at what he did politically, and look at his, you know, look at what he did as president. But if you come back to the moral and ethical side of some of these men and women kind of reinforcing what you're saying here, it really doesn't hold up that well if you say, hey, look at the morality and ethics of these people. They ain't got any.
Well, you know, maybe we can't have it both ways in all of these cases. You know, if we're going to have that bold leader to, you know, move us forward into the future and so on,
mm-hmm.
Okay, in some cases there's that destructive baggage that goes along with it that we don't like. And those of us who couldn't do what they do on the positive side look askance and negatively at their bad behavior. And we say, oh, that's terrible. Well, yes, it is. No question. In a sense, it's a lie. If they have affairs, they're being dishonest where their marriage vows were concerned. And so it's, in a sense, living a lie in part. But is it the price we pay? It's interesting, but throughout human history, many of the great leaders, how about Thomas Jefferson, for one, or Ben Franklin, others. So, is it a price that we have to pay and we shouldn't get so excited about it?
Well, that's interesting because in getting ready for our interview and doing a little research, I started looking at some work from evolutionary psychologists, some of whom may be your friends professionally,
mm-hmm.
who say that this kind of stuff, the Elliot Spitzer, Jimmy Swaggart, Bill Clinton kind of stuff, is basic. Guys seek power. Prestige and resources, they translate into sexual status with more women.
There's some truth to that. I wouldn't go too far with evolutionary psychology because it's almost impossible to prove any of those statements. You know, I mean, I don't think we should be going back to the caveman and drawing parallels with the contemporary world.
Okay.
But, yes, as you mentioned women and so on. The opportunity is a big factor also. You know, they simply have more opportunities. That's what makes Elliot Spitzer's case so exceptionally interesting. A lot of them, you know, will hit on women who are in the campaign in some way, or, you know, volunteers out there, you know, that they meet on the circuit and whatever. He paid for it. And so in a sense, he was kind of different. And it struck me that, in thinking that through, was he trying to control the situation? He felt, well, you know, he knows the prostitution business. He's busted it many times. You know, I mean, he's interesting as the crime buster who got busted by a crime.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But maybe he felt he knew that area and he could control it better than going out and maybe having an affair with a campaign worker out there somewhere, out of town or whatever, or somebody he meets, because they meet people all the time who admire them, who cheer them at their speeches, and who vote for them, so they're admired people. Instead of doing that, he paid for it with someone he doesn't even know, and it was allegedly anonymous, or he tried to keep
uh-huh.
it anonymous. So it struck me that he was really trying to control it much more. And maybe, who knows, we're speculating here, of course, but maybe he learned from Clinton, you know, that you got to exercise a little bit more control over things, because that person out there that you meet on the circuit, you have no control over what they'll say. They might right away blab to somebody.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the money, in a sense, the
That's a great, you know, that's a great point. The $4,000 to $5,000 rendezvous does control things to a greater extent than the evening with somebody in your campaign.
Indeed, and that's big money, and he allegedly, we don't know for sure, but what's been going on allegedly for 10 years, he must know this business, the people involved somehow, and if you recall, I think one of the things that raised the concern of the bank was an attempt by him, I think, to have his name removed from a check or something.
Yes.
And that raised their antenna, and they wondered, whoa, is there something, and they have an obligation to report any unusual such activities with political figures, and they did. And that began the unraveling. But, so he isn't exactly the same as some of the others, but maybe he learned.
Where does this empowerment begin? Can you draw any parallels in the what I call I can do whatever the hell I want to empowerment? Where does this begin? Does it begin with growing up in the right environment, going to the right kind of schools, having the right kind of friends, moving up the line of success very quickly? Is that all part of it, or have you and your colleagues discovered a point at which these guys, regardless of what they do for a living, I keep referring back to the Jimmy Swaggerts of the world. The one thing all of these men and some women share to me is consummate hypocrites. Where does it start?
We don't know for sure.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, political figures aren't the only ones who do this, of course. You know, extramarital affairs are occurring in non-political figures. They're occurring with women as well. So it's not throughout human history. This is nothing new. But it's interesting. If I'm right that there's a sort of a risk-taking personality going on here, there's some evidence for genetics, that there's probably some genetic influence over it, mm-hmm. but the environment, the upbringing, is also a factor. And so it's a combination. And let's say that you might inherit some predisposition to be this stimulation-seeking, risk-taking kind of person, but your environment is, you're raised in the Amish of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think the likelihood that you are going to become a world-class libertine is small. But you might be a thorn in the side of the Amish, you know. You might be challenging things. Why can't we have a TV set? You know, even
right.
The world has TV. These
but that's your way of acting out your real strong inner feelings, right?
Indeed. That's right. But you wouldn't become an Elliot Spitzer, a Bill Clinton, etc. The environment is working against your basic personality.
Let's take a pause on the Baum Show with Professor Frank Farley of Temple University. We're talking about the Spitzer syndrome. When we return, we'll get to the phones at 1-888-463-6748. And as Professor Farley simply stated, when we return, could this all be avoided with the Clintons, the Swaggerts, the Spitzers of the world if they were scoring at home? We'll be right back.